And I want to welcome everyone to tonight's program, tonight's episode. Today is Tuesday, the 21st day of October, 2025. And it's a very, troubling day, time for me. I just want to share that. This marks a very sad anniversary for me. Okay. And I'm not going to get into it, but you know, I want to say something from that. Folks, when you're out in the wild, when you're out there shopping or you're out there dealing with people, I guess. And if they're normal individuals, you know, sane and okay. Give them a little bit of a break, maybe. Because you don't have any idea of what they're currently going through, what they've gone through. You know, I think we have a tendency to, I don't mean to lecture. I don't want to lecture. That's not what I'm doing here tonight. But we have a tendency really to become insular to our own needs and our own views and our own way of doing things. And that's fine. But then when you come across somebody, maybe their husband or wife or child or parent just died. Okay. Or maybe they've just been diagnosed with some terminal illness or whatever the case. Consider that when you're dealing with others and even and especially perhaps on social media. Think about that for a minute. Have we lost a degree or degrees of civility because of social media? I think we have. No, ordinarily, you wouldn't threaten to punch someone in the throat, maybe, if you were standing next to them on the street corner or in the store. But you might do that with social media. I'm just saying. The past several days, I will say this, since I left the air Thursday, wrapping up my involvement in pure investigative work, okay, in the field. In other words, the cases that don't fall into child sex trafficking, which I will still remain involved in, but cases that are closed, I've got to close after three and four and 5 years. So this, since Thursday, I've been in attorney's offices. I've been in the DA's office. I've been in police stations. I've been in, hospitals for different reasons, but I've come across in that process, because it's a process, I've realized a couple of things, or I've been reminded of a few things, that there are some broken people out there, broken people. And there's the exploitation of broken people. Shameless, absolutely shameless exploitation of broken people. The title of tonight's program, From Normal to Assassin in 45 Minutes. I think you're going to appreciate the level of research I've done on this. And it has taken me, I typed in the chat. And by the way, folks, if you're watching this or listening to this live, wherever you might be, sign into Rumble. Create an account if you don't have one. Sign into Rumble, follow us, and hit the thumbs up button or the thumbs down button or the thumbs sideways or up your, button, whatever. But join us. But I've typed in the chat. It took me 2 days to put this information together. Now, this is a product of at least 2 years, and trying to find the proper illustrations for tonight. I'm using things that I've experienced in my life. as an investigator for, again, 30, I guess it's 38 years, I think. That's enough. I'm done. I don't want to deal with blood spatter analysis anymore. I just don't want to do that. Enough. I've seen enough bloody walls and floors and sheets and ceilings, and it's enough. So tonight, I want to talk a little bit differently here, because I think this information is going to resonate with you. I want you to think back for a moment to 2007, 2008, or even 2004 at the Democratic National Convention, where the speaker was Barack Hussein Obama. Where'd this guy come from? Never saw him before. Hey, and wow, what was so articulate, so it's charismatic, so well-spoken. Remember, this is just a few years after 9/11. And the majority of the American public were just like enamored by this guy named Hussein. Wow. And then, of course, the people, as the 2008 election got closer, people began to look into his background. They said, oh, man, he was born in Kenya, or he was born not in the U.S. So that disqualifies him as being president. Well, wait a second. No, it doesn't. Okay. No, it doesn't. And you can dig very deep into the qualifications for president. You've got to be a natural born citizen, and people have really munged the definition of natural born citizen. Okay. They've just really, wow. To the point where people would have you believe that, people would have you believe in things that are not true. And I've always said, Obama could have been born on the White House with JFK, standing over the birth, and, Jacqueline Onassis Kennedy, or Kennedy Onassis, could have been there, handing out champagne glasses while Mama Satoru had her wings spread, popping out a baby. It didn't matter where he was born. But here's part of that whole process. There was a legend created behind this man, and it began not just in 2004 or 3 or 2 or whatever. It began all the way back into the 60s. And people have to, I think people really have to realize the enormity of that legend that was created. So, okay, hang on to that thought. All right. So then 2008 to 17, January of 2017, he took the reins of this country. Again, not one election cycle, but two. And what did he do during that 8-year period? Look at everything that he did. And then, of course, in 2020, because of the voter irregularities, fraud, and so on, you had Biden, which was really an extension of Obama and all of his people. Okay. But, and I would say between those two, you had President Trump, who was really a neophyte politician, a great businessman, but neophyte in terms of a politician, a Washington duke it out kind of guy. Spent 4 years just trying to stay above water, just treading water. And even now in his second term, you notice like how some of the filters are gone, right? He'll be dropping F-bombs during press conferences, and I don't care. I don't care. And some people, that turns some people off, and some people say, oh, he shouldn't do that. Well, you get to a point where you're fighting a fight, and you and I really don't know. We kind of know, but we really don't know the extent of what the hell is going on in the White House. I mean, can you imagine wondering if that person's going to stab you in the back, or that person, who do I trust? You know, I seem to put this person in, and that person turns, and what the hell? It's amazing. Well, that's always been the case, but think about how difficult that would be, and how difficult that whole process would be, especially if, and this is important, okay, that you're not compromised. Which brings me to this, and I'm going to move directly into this, the meat of this, because you folks, you are not going to believe what you're about to hear. So, you know, all this Epstein stuff. Well, Trump is named in the Epstein files. Let's think about this for a second, please. Just stop for a second. If he was, don't you think that would have tanked him? That they would have pulled that out somehow, some way? You know, during Biden's reign of idiocy, I would think. Okay, enough of that. I want to kind of pull your attention to everything that's happened. The national trauma is pretty much over the last quarter century. Well, even the last 70 years. I mean, from JFK onward. You think about what the nation has endured. We as a people have endured the assassination of JFK, right? Seen by millions via the Zapruder tape, and of course, contemporaneous to that, the pictures from Dallas, the hospital, and all of this, and the national trauma that caused. And then you go through the years. You got the MLK. You got RFK assassinations. You've got and just numerous other tragedies and traumas that hit the American mind, hit our minds. Those of us old enough to remember some of those, we do remember those. And then 9/11, and then so on. All right. What the hell's going on, really? And then remember, and I'm going to toss this out to you guys too. Remember Jade Helm, the military exercise that took place in between July and September of 2015, mapping the human domain. What the hell was that all about? Well, you'd be glad to know that that whole theory of, well, this is something a little bit problematic. You'll be glad to know that Michael Hayden, the head of the CIA, said, well, all of the conspiracy theories about Jade Helm in 2015, they were because of the Russians, the Russian disinformation. Huh. 2015. And what we see in 20, well, moving forward after, before, immediately before, during, and even now about President Trump and the Hillary dossier and all that. Well, it's Russian disinformation. Okay. Yeah. So I get the idea, right? And then you look at another thing, and seemingly these, you might say, well, what the hell are you talking about? None of this is related. Ah, yes, it is. And I'll show you how it's related. Think about the mass shootings we've had by, specifically now, only this segment here, by a point one or point, I think it's a very small percent, less than a tenth of a percent of the population committing mass shootings. You had what, the Nashville Christian school shooting in 2023, Audrey Hale, identifying as a male, right? That was in the Covenant School in Nashville, Tennessee. Then you had the Highlands Ranch school shooting back in 2019 and the Rite Aid warehouse shooting. I'm not going to give the names because I don't think they deserve the oxygen. All right. Then the Minneapolis Annunciation Catholic school shooting this year. Colorado Springs shooting in 2022. And then, of course, there are others that just didn't make the news. I'm not going to go through all of them, but all of a sudden, this abnormal spate of the trans violence. And then you've got trans Tifa, right? What's that all about? When did that become a thing? Because Antifa is not, obviously, Antifa is just an idea. It's not an organization. But now you have trans Tifa popping up. And they say, oh, it's really, it's, no, that's, No, that doesn't exist. Well, yeah, it does. So here is something I want to hit, kind of start off this whole episode with. What are we seeing right now? I should add too, the Charlie Kirk shooting as well is part of the national trauma that we've experienced. And with respect to that shooting in particular, what happened with that? What was the end result on social media specifically? It was just, you got a bunch of people on the right arguing with others on the right, seemingly, about, well, that he couldn't have taken the shot and the ballistics showed this and this happened and that happened. It didn't happen. And man, you've got, yep, I'm going to break this news. Stay tuned. And you got all this stuff going on by these social media influencers. And it's contrary information. And it's confusing. It's sometimes certainly not civil at times. And all of this stuff is going on. Well, I'm sure you guys have heard of, everybody listening and tuning in, you've heard of MK Ultra, right? And the sub programs from Artichoke to all of the different ones. Operation Midnight Climax, where they had the CIA took over the brothels and pumped LSD into the Johns, and you know, just to see how things would react. But I'm going to take you to the core of things, because here's what I found in all of this. There's a situation where we are all undergoing, and we are, well, I shouldn't say undergoing, we are all being subjected to a level of behavioral modification and programming. And whether or not people on social media, either as a participant or as just a simple viewer, are all part of this behavioral modification. And the social media with there's a cycle, an intended cycle of videos, whether it's Telegram or, again, name the platform, they're all present. There's a cycle of influencers. There's a cycle of influences. And those influences, for example, create fear, they create doubt, and then suddenly you find a level of I don't want to say companionship, but people who agree with you, and then there's hope, and then there's fear again. Okay, it's a vicious cycle, and it's intended to adversely impact your brain and rewire your brain, and essentially that's what's happening right now. So when you look out at all of these protests, and I'll just show you a few seconds of one. You can see all of these boomers right out there. The blue-haired women that are in walkers and the guys on walkers. And then you see the younger generation as well. And what do they all have in common? Why are they all out there? And why, in some cases, are more boomers out there? When I say boomers, please, that's a demographic. It's only, I mean, as a demographic. Because we are all boomers are not the same, believe me. All members of that age bracket are not the same. But man, you see a lot of people who are brainwashed, right? We say it, but do we actually know what that means? And how, for example, why are all those people out there? How did they decide to go out there? What happened? Oh, you'll see it on the news. They're all out there, but no one explains it. You'll see it reported. Man, you got reporters out the wazoo showing you video clips and all of this, but no one is providing any depth of coverage. All right, speaking of depth of coverage, I'm going to show you this. What do I mean by depth? Because again, remember, folks, this program, I've talked about this before. We can go into topics, you know, an inch deep, a mile wide, cover over. It's just a whole bunch of topics, and you'll be more informed. You're information collectors, that you're collecting information. Boy, you're up to speed. But do you know what's really going on? I think a large percentage of viewers on this platform and listeners of this platform, I think you do. I think you got it. But the majority of people, especially in your life, maybe in your circle, they don't. They don't understand. They've got that, again, that mile wide, but an inch deep understanding, but a mile wide view of things. And I was trying to get like a graphic or something to show you. How do you explain that? And perhaps this might not be the proper context, but I saw this and I thought, you know what? To explain depth, to explain what I'm talking about now, I wanted to play this. I wanted to have this played. And Eric the Tech, this is, he's going to kill me because I've got like pages of show notes here. Let's see here. Cut 6, a minute 39 in. Go ahead and start there. Cut 6, video 6. A minute from that minute 39 to 255. This will explain what I'm talking about. And this, I hope, will put the entire episode in its proper context. So when you're ready, hit it.
One page, one sheet of paper. Everybody would want that, right? Everybody would want that sheet. Here is a flight checklist for a Boeing 737. Who's a pilot now? This is it. Somebody worked for 25 years to come up with this series of best practices to take off an aircraft. Who can take this and go do it? None of us would feel confident, right? What if your family was in the plane? But we have all the steps. We've got all the steps right here. None of us are lacking a script. I want you to think about the difference between how come someone else can take this and go take that plane off versus you. Because these are the same steps they're going to follow. Do you agree? What's the difference? Skill, experience. And mostly, this is on the surface. The difference is depth. The difference is when it says, turn on APU, auxiliary power unit, that they understand what that does. They understand what it means. They understand what to do if it fails. They understand what to do if the light turns green or red or orange. And that's depth. And it feels cool to be in possession of that script. But it doesn't really give us much substance.
Yeah. So does that resonate with you? Because we could look, any one of us could be handed a paper of a pre-flight checklist, right? And okay, go do it. Well, wait, I don't think so. Why not? Because we don't have the depth of knowledge, the skill, the experience. So we don't have that depth of knowledge. But if you spent more time, you would have that depth of knowledge. Instead, we get headlines. We get barraged by talking points and headlines and, it's going to be nuclear war this and it's going to be this. It's going to be that. Stop. Just stop and think about what you're hearing and about who you're listening to and about the feed. Have you seen people with phones, cell phones, and hey, scroll and scroll and scroll? It's that cycle I referenced earlier. And then you get headlines like this. This is cut one. Look, this is only a short video, but Savannah Hernandez was up. The No Kings thing, that was over the weekend, right? Big deal, No Kings. Oh, it wasn't that big of a deal. And that's where you saw a lot of the older demographic, you know, the obvious, the usual suspects, right? And then we started the younger ones, and then you're going to hear on this, well, man, that one, the younger bloods, they seem to like disperse right after it was over. And the story is, well, they were paid to be there. Well, you think? Okay, that yes, but what about everyone else? What's going on with everyone else? I think that's a question we have to ask, but go ahead and play cut one here and we'll lay this out and then we'll move forward because we have to get into things like people like Jolly West and Alice in Wonderland technique and oh my goodness, so many other things, but go ahead and hit that cut one.
So, Jesse, there were two different factions of protesters. We had the one faction who had no idea why they were there, no idea why they were protesting. They were simply programmed by CNN or whatever liberal mainstream media they've been listening to, and they were there. You had the other faction of protesters who were there to call for political violence against their opposition. So I read signs reading, all Nazis go to hell. And of course, it was MAGA supporters and it was ICE that were depicted as said Nazis. You also had a woman holding a sign depicting a guillotine with a single MAGA hat on the bottom. So very clear that these people were either unaware of why they were marching, or they were marching on behalf of illegal immigrants and domestic terrorist organization Antifa. Another thing that I witnessed was people holding up signs with AOC, Bernie Sanders, Zohran Mamdani, and Gavin Newsom's face with big, bold letters reading Antifa. So I don't know if they were trying to tell the truth about the Democratic Party or if they're trying to water down what Antifa truly is, which is a violent domestic terrorist organization. So that's what I saw on the ground. Another thing, too, Jesse, which I thought was really interesting, is initially in New York, that's where I was. You had thousands of people that were there. So, yes, there was quite a large crowd. But then as soon as 1-2 hours passed by, the entire crowd completely dissipated, kind of like they were off the clock and they all just disappeared. It was really baffling to me because I have covered protests extensively for years at this point, and I have never seen a protest dissipate this fast.
Okay, so you get the idea. So it's kind of like pretty much what I said going into that video. Some people had no idea why they were there. Well, wouldn't it stand to reason you would ask why? And shouldn't people ask, why are these people? What is going on here? I want to know. Okay. So then, of course, we have been bombarded with things like Cut 11. Eric the Tech giving you a heads up. We have been bombarded by a lot of things. And our language has been assaulted, has been hijacked. Certain words have been hijacked. A lot of things in our lives have been assaulted, and the meanings changed to fit a specific narrative. We've all heard this before. And you think, okay, well, I'm going to avoid a lot of that by staying off social media and just watching, for example, the program of my choice. Well, the first thing is, did you notice it's a program? Okay, well, I'll watch Fox. Well, they're not immune to this. And really, none of the corporate media outlets are immune to this. In fact, they're pushing this. Cut 11, you remember this, but in the context necessary for today, for this episode, I want you to hear it again. Be reminded of this. Cut 11. Here it is. It's a minute and a half. Here it is.
Hi, I'm Fox San Antonio's Jessica Headley.
And I'm Ryan Wolf.
Our greatest responsibility is to serve our Treasure Valley communities.
The El Paso, Las Cruces communities.
Eastern Iowa communities.
Mid-Michigan communities.
We are extremely proud of the quality, balanced journalism that CBS 4 News produces.
But we are concerned about trouble and trying to be responsible, one-sided news stories plaguing our country.
The sharing of biased and false news has become all too common on social media. More alarming, some media outlets publish these same fake stories without checking facts first.
The sharing of biased and
false news has become all too common on social media.
More alarming, some media
This is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
Okay, so those were all Sinclair Broadcasting Corporation, Sinclair Broadcasting Group stations, I think primarily Fox, okay? and local affiliates of Fox. So what did you notice there, right? Obviously, the first thing I think you should have noticed is the fact that fake news, false narratives, whatever, but fake news primarily has become the new phrase, just like conspiracy theory did after JFK. Now it's fake news. That became a thing with Obama. And remember Obama during his reign, the Smith-Modernization Act went into effect, and that thusly allows our government to program lie to us. Simple as that. But the second thing, and obviously the more noticeable, I suppose the most notable thing for you, for everyone really, is that word democracy. And when you look at the Hernandez segment, everyone's talking about saving the democracy or protecting the democracy or Nazis and, hey, we are no kings. I mean, wow. We don't live in a democracy and we don't have any kings. We live in a constitutional republic. So for those people out there not convinced yet, this is cut 12. And again, this is foundational. And you can skip this part if you're really far advanced and you want to hear it, doesn't matter. But this is a 2.5 minute video clip of telling us about our democracy. And it's old, okay? But notice that we have been, our language has been hijacked, words have been hijacked. Even the nature of our country, of our nation has been hijacked. And that's by design. And I've got the blueprint right here. But here's cut 12. It's from an older broadcast, but it's important. Here it is.
A democracy is a political system in which the people periodically, by majority vote at the polls, select their rulers. The rulers then have absolute power to make whatever laws they please by majority vote among themselves. In a constitutional republic, the people also, by majority vote at the polls, select rulers, who make laws by majority vote among themselves. But the rulers cannot make any laws they please because the Constitution severely restricts their lawmaking power. The ideal of a democracy is universal equality. The ideal of a constitutional republic is individual liberty. In this century, great strides have been made toward the goal of subverting our republic and transforming it into a democracy. The foremost tactic of the subverters is subversion of language. By calling America a democracy until people thoughtlessly accept and use the term, totalitarians have obscured the real meaning of American principles of government. Writers of the Constitution were anxious to safeguard liberty against dictatorship, monarchy they called it. But their chief anxiety was to protect the country against democracy. Edmund Randolph, delegate to the Constitutional Convention from Virginia, said the general object of the convention was to provide a cure for the follies and fury of democracy. Elbridge Gerry and Roger Sherman, delegates from Massachusetts and Connecticut, urged the Constitutional Convention to create a system to eliminate the evils that flow from the excess of democracy. Alexander Hamilton, delegate from New York, said, "We are now forming a Republican government. Real liberty is not found in democracy. If we incline too much to democracy, we shall soon shoot into a monarchy." John Adams, one of the giants of the American Revolutionary period, said, "Democracy will envy all, contend with all, endeavor to pull down all. And when by chance it happens to get the upper hand for a short time, democracy will be revengeful, bloody, and cruel." America was founded not as a democracy, but as a constitutional republic. We pledge allegiance to the republic for which our flag stands, not to a democracy. The Constitution requires a republican form of government for all states, but does not mention democracy, and neither does the Declaration of Independence or the Bill of Rights. Truman asked him what kind of government the convention had given America, and Franklin replied, "A republic, if you can keep it." Very old and very wise, Franklin saw through the mists of time to the day when Americans might trade their freedom in a constitutional republic for the promise of government guaranteed equality and security in a democracy. And beyond that, to the day when democracy inevitably degenerates into dictatorship, guaranteeing nothing but...
You get the idea. Okay. And Eric the Tech, Cut 14 is going to be next. Just give me a heads up because there's just so much here. All right. So obviously our language has been hijacked. You know, gay used to mean something totally different than it does now. Trans, it used to mean a transmission of a vehicle. You get the idea. But how did this happen? How did this takeover happen? Because we allowed it? Well, that's part of it. But even more so, like you saw with that Sinclair grouping of stations, you know, the fake news, the takeover of the word democracy, the constant slamming of that word and the programming that behind it. Okay. And all of this, and I'm leading up to actually the crux of the program, from normal to assassin in 45 minutes. And that's pretty much where we're headed with this. But when you look at all of the things that have led up to where we're at today, none of this is by accident. None of it's by accident. I mentioned MKUltra earlier. Of course, that was all supposed to have stopped back in 73. Richard Helms, the director of the CIA, he did send out a memo to everyone, every person that even thought MKUltra in the organization and in the universities and such, to destroy everything related to that. And then, of course, some things didn't get destroyed. And then Church Committee came in 75 or whatever it was. And, well, you get the idea, right? And we thought, okay, it's all good now because it's all been exposed. It's all good. They're just stopping it. Never stopped. It never stopped. It just took on a different form. Okay. Well, now I'm going to toss this out. The other thing too, this is what I was referencing. This will be again, cut 14. You know, with the shooting, the tragic shooting of Charlie Kirk, the national trauma behind it. There are people bound and determined, influencers, to create this target group of people. And you know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the Jewish people. Now, I guarantee you, okay, I'm going to piss a lot of people off, and I don't care. Well, you know, the Jews are behind it all. You know that, right? That's kind of like saying, okay, the Christians are behind, you know, the CIA. So I was watching this drama from afar unfold involving big names. Okay, well, we're going to drop some information about the assassination, and we're going to give you, yes, you know that it was because of whatever. It was because of the Jews, basically, that Charlie Kirk is dead, because he was waking up to the fact that they run everything. Now, okay, stop. Just friggin' stop. None of us would paint with a broad brush like that. Do we have a problem with foreign interference? We absolutely do. Do we have a problem with selling out to nation state interests in our government? We absolutely do. Does that mean that the Orthodox Jew that runs the butcher shop or the delicatessen, you know, on Long Island, is he part of the problem? Is he the enemy? I'm asking. I don't think so. So I thought, wow, I'm watching this unfold and listening and seeing this unfold, and I can see it in the chat room too. Not now. I'm not looking at that, but I've seen it. It's the Jews. It's the friggin' Jews. They're the problem. And that creates a very dangerous, extremely dangerous narrative. Now, is it the nation state of Israel and some of the leadership that are part of the globalist agenda that are part of the problem? Abso-friggin-lutely. Just like some of the Christians in America. But not all of them. But some. Some, yes, some, again, you've got to be precise in who you're looking at and saying this is a problem. But here's the problem, just like we saw with that Sinclair mashup. It's a broad brush, and all of a sudden everyone is hating the Jews. It's, you know what, it's in vogue. But you're being played. Do you know that? You are being played. I found this, and I tried to verify its authenticity. Okay, now, folks, hear me when I say this. And this is in 1973. And I don't know how many people saw this or heard this. Billy Graham talking to President at that time, Richard Nixon. And I tried to verify this the authenticity of this, and I could not verify it. Do you know what I mean? So I believe this to be an accurate non-AI recording. If I'm wrong, forgive me. Point it out to me. Tell me I'm wrong. But if I'm not wrong, well, regardless, listen to the message and tell me if this does not resonate with you, okay? Again, I tried to verify its authenticity by way of the Nixon Library and official channels, not social media, not Facebook, but through official channels that actually chronicled this conversation. I believe it to be accurate, but if it's AI, then you certainly tell me, okay? But I could not, in the absence of any evidence to the contrary. Well, I'll just play it. The ears cut 14. Here it is. It's a minute and 19 seconds. Here it is.
The Bible makes a distinction, Mr. President, between two groups of Jews. One is called the synagogue of Satan. There's two different kinds. And those people in the latter days is called the remnant of God's people, which will be Jewish people. And then there's the synagogue of Satan. And nearly all of your religious deceptions in the latter days, what the Bible speaks latter days to be 1,000 years, what they call the synagogue of Satan. In other words, they are energized by a supernatural power called the devil. This is what the Bible teaches, whether you believe it or don't believe it. This is the biblical teaching, and this is what I believe. And I believe that you have, they have a strange brilliance about them. They're smart, and they are energized, in my judgment, by supernatural power.
Well, also, they do something else. They're not smart.
And you see, of course, Hitler didn't, they had a stranglehold on Germany, on the banking of Germany, on everything in Germany. And the media, they had the whole thing, you see. But he went about it wrong. But this stranglehold has got to be broken, or this country is going to go down the drain.
You believe that?
Yes, sir.
Boy, I can't ever say it, but I believe it.
No, but if you're elected the second time, you might be able to do something.
Okay, folks, have you seen that before? Has anyone? I'm going to ask the chat. Has anyone seen that before? Oh, here's the. Okay, whatever. Have you seen, has anyone in chat seen that video before or heard that audio from, that video is merely an audio from a conversation between Graham and Nixon, ostensibly, and with a video overlay, but, okay. All right. So was there not a distinction made there? I think there was. Now, I'm not here to argue about the elements of that distinction or whatever. What I'm here to say is we are being played, and I'm watching some pretty hard-hitting influencers being led down some pretty dangerous paths, okay, especially with what happened to Charlie Kirk. Now, again, you have to make the distinction between, like, you and I, as Christians, we're not involved in any globalist adventures and objectives, and the neighbor or the delicatessen owner on Long Island is not involved in any kind of globalist adventures either. So you've got to make that distinction, as opposed to saying, you know, it's all the problem of the Jews. So I painted all of this because you've got all of this confusion, all of this, the all of this chaff going on that distracts us, and it screws with our brain. Okay, it does. It messes with our brain, and this is by design. What we're witnessing in part, and you can look this up. And folks, all of the links to all of these will be at HagmanPI.com when the show is up. It may not be up for an hour or two until after the show is over, but you can grab the links at HagmanPI.com. Watch everything I'm showing you for yourself. And because there's a lot, there's quite a few things in here that I'm not going to, I can't show you the entire video, but you're going to get the idea. So now we are seeing, in my view, the various construct of the CIA, of the globalist agenda, of which the CIA is extremely involved, okay? And the programming, the hijacking of everything we knew, you know, from the word or from the phrase constitutional republic to democracy, from, you know, the various words associated with the homosexual agenda, the trans agenda, and all of this, everything is just being hijacked, and we're constantly bombarded with all of this. Okay, so think about this and understand this is by design. We are being programmed. We're programmed to fear. We're programmed to hate. We're programmed then to hope, and then we're programmed back to fear. And it's this vicious cycle, and it knocks us off balance. So there's when I was looking at this, I found this, and I would also say too, think when I'm talking about this, think about all of the national traumas, including Butler, Pennsylvania. Now I saw somebody in chat, you know, it was all kind of a hoax, or not a hoax, but a stage craft and whatever. Having been down there, Eric Tech, myself, and other investigators and team members, I'm going to tell you something. A man, a father, a husband died, was murdered down there. Don't tell me it was a fucking, psyop. Don't fucking tell me that. Get the hell out of here. Alice in Wonderland technique right now. It's being used on all of us. It's a psychological manipulation method designed to disorient and to destabilize a subject, by undermining our sense of reality, your sense of reality, through confusion and contradictory messages. Again, think about COVID. Oh, wasn't that a mind... Right? It was, wasn't it? The technique is named after the very disorienting illogical world of Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland, where familiar logic is replaced with the weird. Its primary goal is to confound the subject's expectations and conditioned reactions, leading them to seek stability by accepting the next clear idea or command without any critical scrutiny, without like thinking about it. You know who is a master of this and who really authored this is L. Ron Hubbard, Scientologist, okay? Founder of Scientology. He described using confusing, contradictory language to destabilize subjects. The CIA adopted and adapted this method verbatim, almost verbatim, but pretty much verbatim in 1961. And if you want to put this up, this is attachment. You'll see it. There's an attachment here. And folks, you can find this online. The PDF. I have the PDF, but I don't have it as a link. It's the Kubark Counterintelligence Manual, Interrogation Manual. If you can, I think one of my attachments is that. Let's see. I guess I didn't put. Oh, wait a minute. There's a link to that. A link to that image. And that is page two. It's the Kubark manual. There it is right there. So understand this. This was crafted, I believe it was in 61. Hang on one second here. I wrote this down. It was declassified in 1994. And this is the manual that is used for programming people by the CIA, programming people. You want to know how the CIA programs people? It's a lot of it's in this manual. A segment of probably 60% was declassified. The whole thing was declassified in 1994, but about 40% was redacted. And then in 2010, I believe, the book became available with only probably 15 to 20, and maybe not even that percentage of redactions. But to read this is absolutely enlightening, and it does go into the Alice in Wonderland technique. It's a psychological mechanism. It relies on, again, disrupting our... We operate, like you and I, we operate with scripts, predetermined scripts. And I'll show you how that works. We're pre-programmed. Our scripts are pre-programmed mental routines that govern our expectations. So when that's interrupted, what happens is it causes a freeze or a panic state. And if you want to compare it to a computer, you know, the computer freezes up or the app shuts down, and you get the idea, right? So then you go to the next thing that makes sense and you seek that out. Your brain seeks that out. There was a guy, and you can search this on your own, Dr. Milton Erickson. The father of modern psychology, I believe. He was able to identify this principle. The psychological mechanism that relies on disrupting behavioral scripts or pre-programmed mental routines that do govern expectations, that causes a freeze or panic state in our minds. Once destabilized, we become more susceptible. Yeah. We're more prone, how's that, to destabilization? Or, I'm sorry, to suggestion. It's a principle that's also exploited by, I'm sorry, hypnotherapist Milton Erickson. My bad. I got too many names written down here. The state of heightened suggestibility is further exploited through fractionation. Fractionation. And this is what's happening with social media right now. Fractionation is what's happening, which involves cycling between emotional highs and lows to increase vulnerability to influence. Simple as that. Okay. Did you catch that? So let me just say that again. The psychological mechanism relies on disrupting behavioral scripts, which are kind of pre-programmed. You get in the car, you drive to work, you expect to get there. And then when you get to work, there's another script. You go to your desk and you, whatever, maybe you stop and get coffee. Okay. You've got a script. So anything that screws that up, destabilizes a script, man, it's kind of destabilizing in it of itself. Okay. And I'll show you a little bit deeper in this. Once destabilized, subjects become more susceptible to suggestions. See, I said it right there. A principle that Erickson explored, but it's a state of heightened suggestibility, which is further exploited through this fractionation, which involves cycling between emotional highs and lows to increase the vulnerability to influence. So if you happen to be a Jew, for example, and as I just showed you, you don't make the distinction, or somebody doesn't make the distinction, says, all the Jews are responsible for all of our everything that's going wrong. Well, okay, that causes this destabilization. And if you look at your feed on your social media, whatever platform you're using, you can see it vacillates between fear and hope, or fear and, you know, fear and love, or whatever it might be. But you can see, you can actually watch and catalog all of these different destabilizing events. Now, take this and compare it to somebody like, Tyler Robinson, or Thomas Crooks, or any of the shooters, the trans shooters, what's going on with them? Or if you don't want to go that deadly route, what about the blue hairs out there protesting and they got no idea what the hell they're doing? Why am I here? I don't know. I came out here to have my hip replaced. I don't know. Something's going on here. Here's cut 8. This is short. It's only a minute 14. This is Chase Hughes, by the way. I'm going to be citing Chase Hughes from here on out. Chase Hughes was talking about this very subject, and a lot of this information has actually been out there, but it's older that I found. The best ones seem to be a couple of years old and kind of flying under the radar. So this is some good stuff. Here's something that kind of will ease us into the harder parts of this topic. And when I say harder, I'm talking about the more less palatable parts of this topic. Here it is. Here's cut 8. That's a video short.
Social media is rewiring human beings faster than any hypnotist alive could even dream about. That little screen in your hand right now, or maybe your TV or your laptop, that is the laboratory for all of this stuff, and you are the rat. If you had some little piece of resistance inside you that says, maybe not me, that's probably just ego. The experiment that we're all a part of, it's triggering amygdala, it's echo chambers, it's massive amounts of repetition, and it becomes our identity over time. There are three things that flip a script in a human being's head. The first thing is isolation. If I have somebody in isolation, we're missing some key base levels to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. There's no real tribe, there's no real safety, there's not a lot of belonging. Level two would be an echo chamber, and this is a placebo of social connection online, a placebo of information, and it feels like truth, but it is just engineered bullshit. And number three is massive repetition. So this is just rage on a loop until it burns into somebody's nervous system. And that's not persuasion. That's not influence. It's programming. That's absolute programming.
All right. So you get the idea. It's kind of like a segue into the part where we are being programmed. Okay. Now, can you program somebody today? Can you program someone to kill? Can you program somebody to kill in a very short amount of time? The answer is absolutely. Now, in behavioral profiling, and folks, I'm not a teacher, I'm not an expert, never claimed to be, but I have studied behavioral profiling as a forensic science, okay? And if you take a look at someone, and you can look in the mirror or look at someone else, there's your face is a social billboard, all right? For example, by the age of 19, certain features on your face are etched into your face. So if I'm out, if my intent is bad and I'm out looking for an angry young man, okay, because I'm going to take that angry young man. If he's angry, he might be more suggestible. So I'm going to take him and I'm going to program him, or I'm going to do my best to, I mean, he's a good candidate for, you know, maybe taking a shot at someone. The first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to look at his face. And over the period of years, you develop. If you smile a lot, for example, if you're a happy guy or a happy woman, you're going to have kind of crow's feet. Ladies, don't throw anything. Crow's feet. All right. A little bit, you know, little lines there. That shows your default is kind of like a smile all the time. You're joyful. But if you're angry, like me all the time, this muscle right here, you're going to see kind of like two little lines right there. And I don't know if you can see that right now, but you know, boy, you spent a lot of time being angry. Same thing with the lines up here. So when you are looking for, I'm going to say a Manchurian candidate or somebody maybe that might be suggestible, you can kind of tell what's going on. Now, that's not the only thing, but I'm going to say you can kind of tell that, well, and that has nothing to do with suggestibility. That has to do with maybe past trauma, maybe what the person's seen, endured over a period of time. All right. So what have we seen with some of these shooters? And can someone be programmed? Because I thought we stopped all this in the 70s when Richard Helms said, enough is enough. No. And the church committee exposed all this. No, we didn't. We did not. It never stopped. Again, it just changed course. This is, I don't know how I'm going to do this. Let's see here. You know, RFK, one of the prime examples of having a programmed assassin is RFK. What happened with RFK and Sirhan. So to explain what I believe to be happening today, I'd searched for information about behavioral programming, behavioral profiling, and then programming of a potential assassin. And wouldn't you know it, yes, I found Chase Hughes on the, and yes, I found relevant material. The problem on this one is I'm not sure if I... let's go to cut three here. Or wait a second. No. I'm going to cut two. And folks, I'm going to have additional links here that you can watch and follow, get into. And by the way, all of these video clips, all of these people talking, if you like them, and I suggest, you know, you follow them, whether they're on social media or whether they have a specific video channel, follow them. And you're going to be amazed at what you learn. Let's go to cut two. This is how the brain is hijacked into compliance. You don't think that there's this programming going on? And again, think back to Sirhan. Sirhan has no memory of shooting RFK. No memory. And not only that, it's provable that he didn't fire the fatal shot from behind because he was in front. But I digress. We can address that momentarily. But go ahead and go to, what is it, cut two, I said? Yeah, we'll go to cut two. Here it is.
How can a normal person be talked into committing murder in less than an hour? What would it take to get somebody to completely deny every single instinct of survival and social behavior and cause the death of another person? What I'm about to show you is terrifying. It's the darkest side of psychology, and I'm going to show you what all of the experts completely missed. So before we launch into this scary stuff, let's discuss some extreme influence. I teach probably the most advanced persuasion and influence training in the world, but influence itself is just a tool. So like a surgical scalpel, it can be used to save someone's life. It can be used to take it. So a coach, a leader, a therapist, or maybe a parent could use the same influence skills to change someone's lives that a cult leader uses to ruin them. So when it comes to ethics, the tool is only a tool. Let me introduce you to Dr. Stanley Milgram. In 1961, Dr. Milgram did something that would change the world of psychology forever. And this quote of his about this experiment has stuck in my mind since the day that I read it. And he said, "I observed a mature and initially poised businessman enter the laboratory smiling and confident. Within 20 minutes, he was reduced to a twitching, stuttering wreck who was rapidly approaching a point of nervous collapse. He constantly pulled on his earlobe and twisted his hands. At one point, he pushed his fist into his forehead and he muttered, 'Oh God, let's stop it.' And yet he continued to respond to every word of the experimenter and he obeyed until the end."
Can you pause right there for a second?
When I read it.
Okay. And you can just put me aside or on the side, whatever. Think about that statement and think about, for example, that individual that was referenced in that quote, and that is one hell of a scary, very frightening, very concerning quote. So you remember the Milgram experiment. We've talked about it before on this show. And if you don't know about it, you can do the research on it. You can continue watching this, which we're going to go a little further here. But that Milgram experiment was replicated in 2010 with the same results, okay? I think it was Dr. Jeffrey Berger replicated that experiment in 2010 at a university and got the same results. And you're going to see the results of that experiment coming up here. Now, think about that and watch this carefully and apply this to events, whether it was, you know, COVID compliance, carrying out orders for COVID compliance, or even, hey, wait a minute, I have an idea, creating someone who will cause harm to other people. And you may say, well, wait a second, hypnosis, you can't. And listen to me very carefully on this one. You cannot hypnotize or otherwise strong arm, mentally strong arm someone into doing something that's morally repulsive to them. For example, and I remember this in 1994, I was in Las Vegas and I went to a show down there, and it was supposed to be a comedy show. And I guess my wife, we got screwed up with tickets. And anyway, we found ourselves in this hypnotist slash comedy show, you know, where the hypnotist on stage, the stage hypnotist goes out and grabs people, gathers a group of people and brings them up on stage and makes them do stupid things. Or in this case, a little off color stuff, right? So you might say, well, wait a second. I can never be convinced to do something. For example, I can never be convinced to kill someone. I never, never, never. Okay, let me toss this out. Or I'll give you an easier example. I could never be convinced to take off my clothes on stage in front of 500 people in the ballroom. Never. No way. Okay. Why not? Well, I wouldn't do it. Would you do it if your perception was just altered a little bit? Well, what do you mean by that? Would you do it in the privacy of your own home, your bathroom? Yeah, sure. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to program your brain not to think or not to understand or not to be on stage. We're not going to do it. And we're not going to go, we're going to circumvent that moral objection you have by convincing you you're in your bathroom. You're in the privacy of your own home, not in front of all these people. Would that work? Yes, it works. So apply it to, for example, someone who would say, oh, look, I'd never take a life. What if that was not you taking a life? Or what if you were convinced that you were shooting in a paper target? Huh? Would you shoot? Sure you would. You're not killing anything. So just perhaps, maybe, just maybe, the programming is not exactly what we all thought. We're being programmed to be somewhere else in our head, you know, that it's not killing someone. We're not creating a Manchurian candidate to kill someone. We're creating someone to shoot at a target. Sirhan, which we'll get into. He spent 6 hours the day that he shot at Robert F. Kennedy at the Ambassador Hotel. He spent 6 hours at a target range. And it came out through investigation that he also was recruited there at a target range at a gun club by someone called Radio Man. Now, we don't know who this Radio Man is, but they shared a common interest in shortwave radio, allegedly, right? So, okay, let's work this out. Wait a second, Butler. Let me think. Gosh, that sounds familiar. I don't know. Is that hitting any Butler? Just, look, I don't know. Let's go on with it. I'm just saying. Huh. Thomas Crooks. What do I know? All right, let's go ahead and continue with this because I think that this is pretty good. We'll continue for another 3, 4, 5 minutes and then we'll move on. Go ahead.
Anybody that you ask is going to say they could never be talked into such things, but I think you'll be surprised. So what causes a human to go from zero to killer? And if some of us are willing to kill because a stranger in a lab coat tells us to, should we worry? So what if, just like we have visual blind spots, we have behavioral blind spots, like maybe a small hole that allows a person to reach into our mind and start pulling some levers that they probably shouldn't have access to? None of us would really like to believe that we're vulnerable, or this vulnerable, to the world around us. And I think most of us tend to go through our lives just firmly believing that our minds are somewhat of a fortress, and the only things that really get in there are things that we're allowing to come in. This belief is called the fortress illusion. And not only is it incorrect, it's dangerous to believe. So let's talk about a behavioral loophole really quick. I define a behavioral loophole as an inborn quality of the human brain that has its roots in protecting us from harm. So these automatic responses to specific types of stimuli create a loophole in our behavior, where we can instantly shift from processing information and cognitive reasoning to reacting to information and impulse reaction. So since these loopholes are universal in human behavior, they can be pretty reliably exploited, allowing an operator to basically predict an outcome and use that loophole to obtain some kind of desired impulse response, such as focus, excitement, or a strong desire to feel a connection with the other person. So why and how can a person hijack a human's brain, their normal, rational decision-making centers? So let's go back to the Milgram experiment just for a minute. Imagine it's 1962. You respond to an ad in the newspaper that says, we're going to pay you $4 for an hour of your time. The ad says a study on memories being conducted at Yale, and they're going to need all types of people. So they're even going to pay for your gas to come to the campus. They'll probably give you a free sandwich. All you've got to do is mail a detachable coupon to Dr. Milgram. So when you arrive, this doctor greets you, and one other participant is in the lobby there and explains the study. So he says, we'll be conducting a study on memory and learning, and one of you will be the teacher and one's going to be the learner. So the teacher is going to read off a pair of words to the person in the next room. If the learner responds incorrectly, you're going to administer some electric shocks. So you draw the straw and it says teacher on it. The man in the lab coat shows you where the learner is going to be seated in the next room. And as he does, he lets you see the electrodes get placed onto this person's arm. He lets you feel the electricity even that the learner is going to feel in the next room. So he sat in the learner's chair. You walk out of that room. Right beside it, there's another room. And this guy in the lab coat closes the door. And now you're shown to this little teacher's station. At this desk right here, you're going to be seated. And there's a large electrical box there with different shock levers on it, ranging from 15 volts to 450 volts. And right after the 450 volt mark, there's some letters that say XXX, and then it says danger, severe shock on there. So next to the machine, there is a clipboard with groups of words on them. You got to read them out to this person in the other room. And as you take a seat, every time they get it wrong, you have to shock them. So Dr. Milgram was average height. From all accounts, he was a serious dude. He grew up in the Bronx. Many of Dr. Milgram's extended family still bear Nazi concentration camp tattoos. So this left a huge mark on his personality. So at his own bar mitzvah, his speech was solely about the suffering of the European Jews and the stuff that they had to endure during World War II. And Milgram showed a special interest in this guy, Adolf Eichmann. He was an organizer of the Holocaust. The actions of Eichmann inspired the development of the obedience experiment. And Milgram simply wanted to know if it was true that, as Eichmann said while he was standing trial in Israel, that he was just following orders. So inside the Milgram experiment, The learner is in one room. The teacher, which is you, are in the other room, shocking this person because the person in the lab coat's telling you next to. With every incorrect answer, as the voltage increased, the teacher was told the microphone was just one-way communication tool to the other room, but he could hear the protests. He could hear screaming and pleas for help from the other side of the wall and the sounds of the learner in pain. They were coming from a record player, actually, in real life, with pre-recorded screams and all that kind of stuff. He even says he has a heart condition. He wants to stop the experiment. All kinds of stuff is going on, and this guy in the lab coat is continually telling them to increase the voltage with every wrong answer. So you can imagine participating in something like this could be pretty damn stressful. That's why we don't have experiments like this anymore. But they continued shocking the other person. So initially, these scientists got together. They predicted that 99% of people would outright refuse. They argued the only people who would go all the way through with this were psychopaths or sadists. And they predicted only 0.1% of people would go all the way. But in fact, 65% of people about went all the way to maximum voltage. 250 volts can kill you. How many people do you think went all the way up to 250 volts? Surprisingly and sadly, it was 100%. So, of course, if somebody interviewed you and asked, would you go all the way up to 450 volts? You'd bet anything that you own, you would never do anything like that. And you'd be able to resist the experimenter. I would walk out of the room. The experiment has been replicated dozens, if not hundreds of times with about the same results. Most people go all the way. Everybody obeys to some extent all the time. So why then do people obey? The experimenter didn't issue orders. He didn't shout. He didn't scream. He didn't make demands. He didn't have some secret persuasion technique. There was no hypnosis being used. They just listened. So let's look at a few more experiments here. I want you to investigate these with me. Another experiment that, in my opinion, is even scarier. A person volunteered to take a survey.
Now, pause it right here, if you don't mind, and you can drop that for a second. So we all, I'm pretty sure everyone knows about the Milgram experiment. And in fact, you can cancel the rest on this because of the time factor. But if you think about this, what happened during COVID? What happened during that, you know, the Fauci and the cops just following orders and the insanity that was COVID? Could it possibly be an extension, regardless of its origins? In other words, maybe they did not expect this this pathogen, excuse me, the pathogen or the death jabs, or maybe they did, but regardless, that's not the point. The point is, how many people, even today, knowing what we all know, are still going for their death jabs? Got to get a booster. Got to get that mRNA booster. Got to get it. How many families have been fractured by all of this? The damage is incalculable. Could this have been kind of like a modern day Milgram experiment, you know, with kind of certain things that are a little bit different? But you see how we're always being controlled? Now, okay, I'll tell you what, I'm going to stop that right there. And please, I urge you to go ahead and, especially with Chase Hughes and the other three gentlemen there on the behavioral panel, they all have individual channels as well as the behavioral panel channel. Certainly subscribe to their stuff because it's fantastic. And I'm familiar with the teachings of Chase Hughes. Obviously I've been part of some training programs and I'll just leave it there. Okay. So anyway. Now, let's bring it to the murdering aspect of things. So Chase was on with, I think it was on with Rogan back in 2022. Now, this is 3 years ago. And this is something that kind of flew underneath the radar. Now, understand this. Chasey has studied Sirhan Sirhan. Okay. Not the incident, but the man. Okay. He flew to San Diego, and where Sirhan Sirhan was in prison, and he studied the mind of Sirhan Sirhan because there was all this talk of him being programmed. Now, think about what you're about to see with some recent shooting incidents, especially kind of the ones that almost have the same comparable things, you know, rooftops and bouncing up and down and long-distance rifle shots and... Oh, he was kind of a loner. He was no indication. He was a good kid. And, you know, what happened? Kind of like what happened during COVID to all the people. We got to get that shot, man. You see how we're all being programmed? It's one. And again, go think back to the word democracy being pushed down our throats. No, it's constitutional. Everything is being hijacked. Roseanne Barr, and I don't find these types of clips, for example, to be helpful. Roseanne Barr came up with one. I'm not even going to play it. It was like a minute and a half, 2 minutes, where she said, if you knew the truth, you couldn't handle it. Yeah, that's the crux of the message. And it took her 2.5 minutes to say it, which is fine because it takes me longer than that to probably say it. But offered nothing like, okay, what are you two? Are you smarter than us because you can't tell us what you know? Tell us what you know. We can handle it. We're adults. But you see more and more of that kind of stuff going on. Well, okay, we can handle it. And tell us, show us. And, you know, a lot of this is clickbait crap, okay? But the deeper level stuff, man, I'm telling you right now, the deeper level stuff that is getting people into people's heads, it's really forming the behavior. So I'm going to show you this about Sirhan Sirhan and Chase Hughes and this conversation that he had. I think it was with Rogan. Like I said, this is source video 4. Can you be programmed to kill on command, fraud and lies about what happened to RFK? The entire video itself is over an hour. So I've got, I don't know, a dozen clips, maybe more. Let's go to cut A from source video 4. And again, all
how
of this will be
in the world guy. Did this young guy find area with a fourth bullet passing through his jacket? And he was put into an ambulance, rushed to the hospital, and died about 26 hours later.
Did we have a problem with that? Okay. So I'll give you some insight into this. The first cut is going to be kind of an overview, the basics of the RFK assassination itself. And then cut B is going to be talking about Lee Harvey Oswald, as well as Sirhan Sirhan and some other people in there. And then we'll go on to really get into some very interesting things that you can apply to today. You can take what he's saying and think about the events of the last 10, 15, 20 years, 25 years or longer, but you get the idea. But again, pay attention to the segments here because I think these are pretty doggone good. Go ahead and cut A. Here it is.
Around 12:15 a.m. Pacific time on June 5th, 1968, Sirhan fired a .22 caliber Ivor Johnson cadet revolver at then United States Senator Robert F. Kennedy and into the crowd surrounding him. And this took place in the kitchen of the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles. And this is just shortly after Kennedy had finished addressing supporters in the hotel's main ballroom. Arthur George Plimpton, Jimmy Breslin, Pete Hamill, and former professional football player Rosie Grier, and 1960 Olympic gold medalist Rafer Johnson were among several men who tackled and disarmed Sirhan. And they held him down onto this stainless steel food table. And Sirhan continued shooting, despite having his hand held down onto the table by a man about twice his size. Kennedy was shot three times for sure, once in the head and twice in the back slash armpit area, with a fourth bullet passing through his jacket. And he was put into an ambulance, rushed to the hospital, and died about 26 hours later. In a 2018 interview with the Washington Post, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., RFK's son, said that he had traveled to the Richard J. Donovan Correctional Facility in California to meet with Sirhan, and that after a pretty lengthy conversation, the details of which he didn't want to disclose, he firmly believed that Sirhan did not kill his father. And on top of that, a second gunman was involved. Wait, what? The senator's own son and lots of other family members are publicly announcing they believe that Sirhan wasn't guilty. Just imagine traveling to meet somebody who shot one of your parents, and then an hour or two later, you firmly decide that that person's innocent.
Imagine the level of, imagine, as he said that, imagine that bar. You would have to, that's a pretty high bar. If I would think if I went in to see about, you know, this man who I was told all my life killed my father. What was said? What convinced him at that point? And if you look, and I don't know if there, I don't know if I included that in this, but this also tells a tale, a very dark tale, about the Los Angeles Police Department, about the LA County Coroner's Office, about the district attorney at that time, and about the CIA influence to cover everything up, special unit senator, the unit tasked with investigating this. None of it was true. I mean, everything that was, they hid the truth from the American public. So to those people who think that, like, this isn't exactly modern, this does predate the Church Committee, the programming was still going on, and I'll prove it. Go ahead and go to cut B. This is very interesting. It's about 2 minutes from the same source video. And again, HagmanPI.com, you can find all of the you can find the source of video, and you can watch the entire thing. I think it's very fascinating. So go ahead and cut B there.
I ran across this quote in some research that was pretty horrifying and fascinating at the same time. And it was written by this guy. His name is Dr. George Estabrooks. He is a Harvard University graduate, Rhodes Scholar, and chairman of psychology at Colgate University in New York. And he's the only mind control doctor who publicly acknowledged conducting extensive hypnosis work on behalf of the CIA, the FBI, and military intelligence. In the 1940s, he said, and I quote, "I can hypnotize a man without his knowledge or consent into committing treason against the United States." He acknowledged building Manchurian candidates. In this guy's book called Spiritism, Dr. Estabrooks describes experiments done to create multiple personalities. And in another book called Hypnotism, Estabrooks says that the creation of experimental multiple personality for operational use in military subjects, who he refers to as super spies, is ethical because of the demands of war. And here's actually what he said. "We know that dual and even multiple personality can be both caused and cured by hypnotism. Moreover, the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde combination is a very real one once it is established. The key to creating an effective spy or assassin rests in splitting a man's personality or creating a multiple personality with the aid of hypnotism. This is not science fiction. I have done it." End quote. This was a process which the doctor described as child's play. And that same year, the year of President Kennedy's assassination, Estabrooks suggested that Lee Harvey Oswald and Jack Ruby, quote, could very well have been performing through hypnosis.
Now think about that for a second. Okay, so hypnosis, that's one thing. but add into like today's, by today's standards, you're talking as well. And he referenced this. You're talking about what I mentioned earlier, fractionation of our emotions, of our mind. Okay. Think about this. There's a term called cyclothemia. And I found this, I never heard of that term before, but that what that is this emotional cycling of your brain. Apply it to social media, your feed, whether it's Telegram or, again, pick any platform. As you scroll through, that feed is causing you to emotionally cycle. And what happens, that creates mood disorders. Do that enough and you will be suggestible, because obviously you will not be part of, or you're going to lose the script of your life, your normal life. I know it sounds a little bit too deep, but it's a thing. We're being rewired. Our brains are being rewired. It's, and look at, for example, because how would you explain that percentage of the population who identify as a furry or identify as a dude when it's a woman or vice versa? How do you explain any of that? Was this present at this level a decade ago, 2 decades ago? No? Well, maybe it was, but what percentage? Very small. But what changed? Social media. And again, the programming, the rewiring of one's brain. So do you think today it would be easier to find a young man to convince him that he's shooting at a paper target when in fact it's the president of the United States, or you convince him that the enemy, that he's got an enemy, and his enemy is Charlie Kirk? Doesn't that make sense? Absolutely. Absolutely. It answers so many things. So, the most obvious example, of course, is the constant barrage, democracy, a threat to saving our democracy. We don't live in a democracy. Everything's changed. The words are constant programming. Go ahead and hit cut C.
This thing details out a desire and a plan to program someone against their will to assassinate public officials. Wait. What? The CIA planning and experimenting with creating Manchurian candidates using hypnosis, then programming them to conduct assassinations of political figures. And keep in mind, this document is from the late 1950s, right before Kennedy was killed. And the CIA is on record creating Manchurian candidates that can assassinate, quote, American officials. This is pretty heavy, and I'm not even touching theory here. This is all proven, and this is all from the documents that the CIA released. Some other people involved here were Aldous Huxley, who was this prominent writer and psychedelic drug enthusiast, and Dr. Margaret Mead, who was a cultural anthropologist. But there's one expert I could think of that has probably hypnotized more people than anyone in the world. And he's also one of my early mentors. His name is Anthony Gailey.
Okay, stop right there, because I'm going to address, or we need to play this clip as well. You know who else was part of that whole construct of programming with the CIA? Julia Child. I'm sure a lot of people knew that, right? You know, her association with OSS and then the CIA. OSS, the predecessor of the CIA. So she was recruited by the CIA, or the OSS and CIA. And she was taught certain behavioral modeling skills. And then she, of course, went on to be a TV chef, cook, whatever. But I found that very interesting. And many other actors in Hollywood did the same thing. And let me, Eric the Tech, I don't mean to mess with your stuff here, but I want to show you. This is an attachment, Eric the Tech. People say, well, you know, most of this is kind of old stuff. No, no. Have you been to Disneyland lately? You know, I spoke about the Alice in Wonderland technique. But did you know this about Disney, the Disney World in Florida? Or the state capitol in California, the marble floor in the state capitol in California? Did you know this? Well, what's this? Well, go ahead and put up the attachment. Hans Scharf with Disney Mosaic. The mosaics at Disney World in Florida, whatever Disneyland did with Disney, the Disney place in Florida, Epcot Center and all that. You're going to find a whole bunch of mosaics there, Alice in Wonderland mosaics. Well, guess who made those? A guy by the name of Hans Scharf. And you may say, well, wait a second, who's Hans Scharf? Well, he was one of the top Nazi interrogators. As a matter of fact, after World War II, he proved to be such an important interrogator in Nazi Germany. The U.S. Air Force brought him into the U.S. to teach classes on interrogation. And kind of forgave all of his sins, right? Well, you can, folks, again, because of time, you can read about Hans Scharf. And you can do your own investigating on this. In fact, I'll put a link up there in the show notes. There, the page... page 4 in the show notes, how a former Nazi interrogator left a permanent mark on Disney. You can, it'll be in the show notes at HagmanPI.com. You can search that yourself and you can see both what he did as an interrogator, but also what he did in the U.S. And we brought him over here. Thank you, Eric. That, there it is. It's so that stands today. And his marble floor creation in the Capitol, State Capitol in California, State Capitol building in California, stands or exists today. But I was especially looking at the Alice in Wonderland mosaic because of the significance. And think about being programmed. And here's some more with RFK, or yeah, the murder of RFK. Go ahead and continue with, you should be around 2413, 2415 of that video that you paused for this. And again, apply this to today because none of this has stopped. None of this. It's all like through USAID, through these shell corporations. It's all being funded through by way of the CIA, through NGOs and governmental organizations into universities. And that's why many of the universities are these incubators of all of this crap that we're seeing. They're all being programmed. And doesn't that send a pretty significant message that one of the people who were outing all of this, going back to the, you know, look, we need to, you got to stop this. Stop this. All this non-biblical stuff. Speaking at a college campus was shot. Doesn't that send a pretty traumatic message out there? I think it does. And then worse to rub salt in that wound than to exploit. I believe that there's foreign influence here. But to exploit his death because you think that it's all the Jews, it's the Jews behind it. Well, no, you're not being precise enough, like I said earlier. So you're seeing what I described earlier, you're seeing happen on social media right now. So then I have to ask myself, wait a second. Are they being exploited, or are they doing the exploiting? I don't know. That I don't know. You decide. But does it matter? Because you're still being programmed. Let's cut through this real quick here. Finish this off. Because RFK, in this context, is a model for pretty much all of these shooters, I believe, in the programming. Go ahead and finish that or pick that up where it was.
So there's always the question, and I get asked this all the time, and I've obviously got my own response, but can a person be hypnotized against their will?
I don't know how you define that. The standard statement that hypnotists have been saying for as long as I've been around is that nobody will ever do anything in hypnosis that they would not ordinarily do. That's the catch-all phrase. And strangely enough, that's true. You can take the best hypnotic subject and tell them to do something, quote unquote, against their will or antisocial, go take your clothes off in front of 500 people, whatever. The subjects will either employ trance logic, don't feel like it, just not into it, or they will flat out snap out of it and refuse. A direct suggestion will almost always fail. However, you have a lower level of control. And to a degree, you can control their perception. You can, if it's a very good subject, convince them that they're not in front of 500 people, that they're standing in front of a shower and it's been a hot day. They've been working all day long. They're hot and sweaty. Take a shower. Now, is it against someone's will to take their clothes off to take a shower? No. But if they happen to be doing it in front of 500 people, the question is, you know, did they do something against their will?
Right.
The hypnotist, to a degree, can control certain variables. You can have people smell things that aren't there, see things, negative and positive hallucinations, remember things, hear things, not remember things. You have things you can manipulate. So the old adage, you'll never do anything you wouldn't ordinarily do, you can get away with that. What they don't say is that with a percentage of subjects that are extremely hypnotizable, if you've had repeated sessions, if they trust the hypnotist, if they do not perceive the suggestion as something antisocial or immoral, they'll do it.
Yeah.
And folks, don't think that, for example, a hypnotist or hypnosis session is that you're lying on the couch or sitting in a chair and somebody, you know, dangling a watch in front of you. Again, this can happen through visual cues, through social media, through that fracturing of your mind, changing your behavioral outlook, the word I mentioned about the emotional cycling that creates mood disorders and puts you in that specific state where you are more vulnerable. And again, that's the danger here. And that's why, as well as the indoctrination factor that we see. So there are multiple factors now that weren't, that didn't exist in the 60s, but they exist now. But the basics of creating a Manchurian candidate, and this is, we'll go to 2605, cut E, on this one here. This is about assassins. Let's go to Cuddy right now. Go ahead.
So do you think in this case of Sirhan, or in a similar case, that a person could be made to view themselves in a certain situation as, I'm at a firing range, I'm not in this group of people, and I'm shooting at a paper target or something similar?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think the government answered that question back in the early 70s and 60s. Just look in everyday life. During the Vietnam War, we were routinely taking 18, 19, 20-year-olds who had never had a gun in their hand in their life. And then 6 months later, they're out, some of them committing atrocities, doing things that they would have never dreamed they were capable of doing. So yes, if you can control the environment, cults are another example of people, you know, mass suicides and things you see. Yeah, you can, if you've got control of certain variables, most of us would do almost anything.
Okay. There you have that answer, right? Because again, once your mind is fractured, and there's different ways to fracture one's mind, but the easiest and most accessible way to do it is through social media. I'm telling you right now, that's like the globalist gift to the really nasty players here. All right, let's go to cut F, B. Because how long would this take to create like a Manchurian candidate? Cut off. Here it is.
One in the world. What do you think? How long would it take for somebody who is a real expert to create something like a Manchurian candidate, or even to simulate it?
Again, the research is fairly clear that looking at hypnotic suggestibility in a random group of people, a random group of 1,000 or 100 people, you will get the proportions of a bell curve. Most 68% are average hypnotic subjects, but as you go up to the positive end of the curve, there are expected about 2.14 to 5% of extremely highly suggestible people, probably because they've been hypnotizing themselves all their lives.
Now, think about that real quick, because so you've got that bell curve there and the highly suggestible people, the number there, the percentage there is that at most 5%. So what are we seeing in that trans community, for example? And think back to I opened with the violence, the shootings done by the trans people. You think that's coincidental? No, the percentage of violent shootings by that community, by that demographic, is super high. And you have to say, well, what's going on here? It's that programming. It's that fracturing. It's that indoctrination. It's all of that. And then there's this. What do we see taking place right now with Ukraine and Gaza and all this stuff? They're bombing the crap out of people. Where did Sirhan come from? Well, I'll tell you what. We'll let Cut G do the explaining on this one. Go to Cut G.
So we know that, you know, Sirhan, for instance, grew up in Palestine and didn't move to the U.S. until he was about 12 years old and saw some horrific things at a very young age. And he was already kind of prone to dissociation when he showed up here. And I think he would have been a good subject either way, but I think that definitely added to it.
Absolutely.
Okay.
This is where you will get in clinical observations, the multiple personality manifestation. Every once in a while, a person that almost always it was a trauma that was suffered at an early age. As you say, it caused them to separate the trauma part of them to the non-trauma and create, as you might say, a new identity or a safe identity. So they had already done the work. Like I say, when I see these really good subjects, it's not by accident. They've been doing it for years. So yes, the characteristics that would lead to a person being able to do that, they have probably been doing it for a long time.
So my final question for you.
Yeah, you can cut that. So if you think about this, and folks, again, you can watch the entire video, and I suggest you do. So when you think about this, not only are we creating the future assassins or potential assassins through this trauma, but we're actually bringing them into this country as refugees. You think that was maybe part of the plan? My sense is if we all don't think that, I don't think we're thinking big enough. Let's go to Cut J. Remember RFK, if you don't know the story behind it, folks, do yourself a favor and really sink your teeth into the events of that night, the assassination of RFK, and a lot of the parallels to different things today. But the talk of the talk of the woman in the with the polka dot dress. Remember that? I'm going to cut Jay on this one. Here it is.
Yeah. Some of the speculation or some of the opinions that I've heard are that he was programmed or trained, you know, whatever word you want to use there, to visualize himself at the shooting range.
Yes.
And then, and hypothetically, this woman in the polka dot dress could say, that's the target down that way.
Yeah.
And
that would be a clever and dark way to override our inhibitions against murder.
Okay. There was a lot before that I cut out here, but understand the programming part of this. So is it easy to create an assassin to go out and take a shot at President Trump or to take a shot at Charlie Kirk or to shoot up, the different schools. And no, is it difficult? No. Are there people doing it? Absolutely. But where's your proof? Well, the proof is in the numbers, as I mentioned. The proof is in the things that we see with our eyes. The proof is of programming is everywhere. You just have to look for it. But what is the end game here? The end game, obviously, is to completely take away our free will. I mean, think of the big objectives. All right, I'm going to stop with the commentary. Let's go to Cut K. There's a level of intimidation. Let's go to Cut K. It's same source video, by the way. Go ahead.
Is that police deliberately tried to erase her from existence in people's testimony. They would repeat to people over and over that this woman didn't exist, even when they would be completely sure that they saw her. Just listen to this.
Sirhan Sirhan's defense faced other problems. There have been suggestions that pressure was put on some eyewitnesses to change their stories, as in the case of Sandra Serrano. This audio recording was released long after the trial, along with other documents as late as 1988.
She just reported to the police what she saw, and yet they treated her like a criminal. After weeks of bullying her, finally she gave up and said, I don't know what I saw.
I testified under oath and on lie detector test that I saw the polka dot dress. And he said, no, you never saw this girl. And he kept drilling into my head that I was wrong, that I didn't see anyone, I was off the lie detector. He turned it off. And he was saying, look, you didn't see the girl in the polka dot dress.
So what are there parallels to today? Absolutely. With the proliferation of cell phone videos and such, what does the FBI do? They confiscate your cell phone, the video, and they tell you you didn't see what you saw, and so on, and so on, and so on. Okay. The same template exists. So let's wrap this up with cut L, the final cut here. And again, folks, watch the entire video for the complete context of all this and compare it to what has happened, what is happening today. And think about how this would apply, not just to the murders that we're seeing or the attempted murders, but also the programming of individuals to chop off body parts or to convert into things that they're not. And think about the level of programming that is required, but also think about the fracturing of one's brain to model the behavior to accept that as normal. It's not normal. And here's cut L. There it is.
Is who the hell did this programming? And in my opinion, and many others who know way more about the case than I do, and I'm definitely no expert on this case, his name is Dr. Lewis Joylen West. People called him Joy. How stupid. He worked for the CIA. He performed hundreds of mind control experiments and even had an experiment lab really close to Los Angeles. After all this that sounds like fiction, I learned that RFK had been investigating and really digging into organized crime in a major way. He was pulling people like Jimmy Hoffa into public congressional hearings. And when Kennedy found out the CIA had partnered with the mob to help them get rid of problems, he was pissed off. He was really, really pissed off. Wait, the CIA partnering with the mob? Yeah, we know that also for a fact. So investigators tell us that this ranch where Sirhan worked as a stable boy, the operator of this ranch had ties to the mafia, and that the mafia in turn had links to the CIA from their work together trying to kill Cuba's Fidel Castro. And then in Pasadena, Sirhan met a guy only known as Radio Man. And he's this guy who Sirhan met that shared Sirhan's amazing interest in shortwave radios. And they believe that Radio Man used what they call walking coercive persuasion and what they say is, quote, possibly hypnosis, end quote, to control Sirhan. An investigator wrote the statements about killing RFK written in Mr. Sirhan's spiral notebooks, which Sirhan did not remember writing, quote, were written by Mr. Sirhan in a hypnotic state and while communicating with a third party over his shortwave radio, and thus were coercively and involuntarily induced. Over the next 2 years, Sirhan began visiting firing ranges not far from the ranch with guidance from this radio man on how to shoot at targets. And he spent about 6 hours at the range on the day of the assassination. So if you're able to hypnotically program somebody to completely forget an entire event, also make them commit murder under hypnosis, and even make them act on command from a pinch on the neck by a woman in a polka dot dress, do you think you might be able to make them also write something in a journal? I'm just saying. So let's.
All right. Think about now, apply that to today, recent events too. How many times have we not been afforded the various manifestos, right? Or the writings, the notebooks, the papers, the letters or whatever of the shooters, alleged shooters or the certain shooters. They don't exist or no, we can't release them. Do you see the pattern here from intimidation to holding back evidence to changing evidence, all of this? So to wrap this all up, okay. Again, from assassin, from normal to assassin in 45 minutes, it's really simple. But there's a learning curve here, and there's a curve of acceptance, I suppose. It's something that you, when you look at this, you have to think a little bit larger and go a little bit deeper than other episodes, other platforms do. And that's what I wanted to introduce you to tonight. The fact that there is a logical reason for what we're seeing here. There is a system in place that it just doesn't indoctrinate, or it doesn't expose, or they just only show you the news. They indoctrinate people. And of course, they're looking for the suggestible, the susceptible to the hypnotic aspects and the fracturing of the mind. And they're creating these assassins. They're creating these shooters. They're creating all of these people through various methods. But the fact is, it hasn't gone away. And we can see the same thing. You know, it's almost like there's the same playbook, just a different day. We can see all the headlines. We can hear all the headlines. Shooting here, mass shooting over here. But you can report on it. You can argue about ballistics. You can argue about where the shooter was or whatever. But is that really where the attention should be? If that's your thing, go ahead. If that's what you need, if that's where your interest lies, go ahead and do that. But let's look at the bigger picture. And the bigger picture is this. The mind control is still going on. It's been refined. It's been using social media. It's been using the internet. It's been using electronics. Think about 5G as well. We can throw 5G in there. Think about that dark COVID period. What happened during that time? Think about all of this relative to everything from the Milgram experiments to all of the various traumatic times in our nation's history and our people, the history of the people. And think about everything that's being thrown at us today, and understand that, you know, to cover a headline is one thing, but to really dig deep and to find out what the hell's really going on, that's totally something else. And I hope I did okay. If you give me a B plus or a B minus or even a C, I'm just trying to bring, all I'm trying to do is get you to look at the bigger picture, understand the deeper side.